Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
The Sim Spotlight is sponsored by Balance of Nature. Whole food supplements. Visit balanceofnature.com. Joins us every Wednesday during the football season at 8 a.m. We're going to see him live and in person at Teller's tomorrow night. That is the great two-time Super Bowl champion, Giants legend, Phil Sims. Phil, good morning!
Good morning, guys. I mean, can we get a better song for me? What the hell? What's that song from?
That's from The Courtship of Eddie's Father. That was a TV show back in the day when you were growing up and I was growing up, and I asked Al to find that song because I just wanted to introduce you as my best friend.
Oh, I see. I see.
You haven't
figured that out all year long.
You just figured that out today?
Well, I've been meaning to say it, but, you know, things always come up in my head, so I go with that instead of what, hey, Gio, you know, you're taking your balance of nature, your damn knee, what's wrong?
I don't know, man. It's embarrassing, I got to say. It really is. I just,
did you do something athletic at least?
No, I did not. That's why it's embarrassing. I don't do anything. I'm like a veal. I just sit in the dark all day. I don't understand.
Well, you know, listen, you guys should hear my conversation with the great sports guy, Al Dukes, here, you know, before we come on. He goes, I said, Al, do you watch, and, you know, when you talk, he goes, nah, I don't really watch any of the games. You know, I just see one play, and I kind of talk off of that.
That's the way he is with headlines. Like, he just sees a headline. He doesn't read the body of the article or anything. He just reads the headline.
Yeah, and I said, boy, I said, Jerry must feel like a genius around you, you know.
Oh, he is. Actually, he is. All right, so we're talking to Phil Sims. Were you surprised?
All right, let's go.
Were you surprised that Mike McCarthy got fired? Not fired, but a mutual parting of the ways down in Dallas?
Yes, I was. I thought he was, you know, kind of the perfect guy for Jerry Jones. I mean, Mike McCarthy never complained about the fact that when the game is over, it's always about what Jerry thinks. And, you know, so Jerry always holds that press conference, Jerry Jones, of course. And, you know, the Deion Sanders talk and all that, I was like, gosh, there's no way Jerry Jones would hire Deion from this respect. It's just that when it's Jerry Jones is the spokesman for the Dallas Cowboys. He doesn't want the coach to be the spokesman. And if you got Deion Sanders, they might run to him instead of to Jerry Jones. So, I was a little surprised they let him go.
There's that side of Jerry Jones, but there's also the side of Jerry Jones where he wants everybody talking about the Dallas Cowboys, and he wants to be the most entertaining thing in the NFL. And maybe he did hire Bill Parcells at one point in his career when he was younger. You know, maybe Jerry at this point of his life is okay with somebody else being the face of the organization to give some life and some juice to this organization that's been down for the last couple of years.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things there. You know, one, Bill Parcells, did Jerry Jones love that experience? I know they played better, they were building, whatever, but, you know, Bill's a big, they go running to Bill Parcells because, one, he's a great interview usually after or before games. That's one thing. And, you know, so I don't know. It was interesting, the whole thing. All these coaches, I just can't wait till they start hiring just to see what happens in the NFL.
Yeah, it's crazy. Maybe Kellen Moore gets a look down there. They know Kellen. Kellen knows them, and maybe Kellen's the perfect personality.
He would be perfect.
Yeah, he'd be perfect because of what you just said about Jerry Jones being the face of the organization. What'd you think of Mike Vrabel's opening press conference as he was announced as the new head coach of the New England Patriots?
Well, I did watch some of it, and I just went, damn, he's big. So when he walks in the room, I don't care who you are, you go, hey, I got to be careful about this dude. You know, his presence is, it's really tremendous. And, you know, I've told you, Boomer, and I guess GL too, I've said this, and, you know, Mike Vrabel, I went down and had some time in Tennessee or whatever to watch games or do games, and when he was there, and he said this to me once, that, you know, he, he couldn't wait to get a head job because he was going to show the X's and O's that he really wanted to use on it with his football team and his defense and all that. Then he got down there, he started doing it. He goes, look, this is about one thing. You got to have a great relationship with the players. That's the only way this thing has worked, the way it works. And he really worked on that, and he did have a great relationship. The players loved him down in Tennessee. So I think the same thing is going to happen up in New England for him.
All right, so what happened to Sam Darnold against the Lions and then against the Rams? He was a MVP type of candidate before those two games. He was playing that well and then completely fell apart. So what did you see from your perspective?
Well, I just, you know, going this way first, he did miss passes in both games. You got to know in this day and age where you are in that game or whatever, and I'm saying this, that you just got to go, I got to get rid of the football. Because each sack really ruined every drive. He did miss some throws too, but again, it was just more than that. It's they would show replays and Troy Aikman's talking. I'm just going, guys, can we throw? And I said this to you guys probably last week. Can we throw some short passes? Does everything have to be, you know, 20 yards trying to get it down the field to Justin Jefferson and Addison and all that? So, you know, I had a little problem with that. And the offensive line, once again. All right, Boomer and I talk about this stuff a lot during the week. I said, when they played Week 8, the Los Angeles Rams defensive front pushed the offensive line of the Minnesota Vikings all around. And it kind of caught me by surprise when I watched it again. And I said, wow, I forgot this. And I said, well, I'm not worried. Minnesota, they're going to buck up and get tough. And after that Detroit fiasco, they'll play really well against the Rams. Well, that was not the case. They were awful.
You know, it's one of the quarterbacks I want to ask you about coming out of the wild card round, and that would be Jordan Love of the Green Bay Packers and Justin Herbert of the Los Angeles Chargers. Neither one of them had what they needed to have, which would have been a perfect game against the defenses that they were going against, and they were both on the road. Your assessment of their performances?
Oh, well, listen. Justin Herbert got, it's a wonder he didn't get hurt. That's the first thing. And, you know, the Houston Texans, they're very fast on defense. It is a good pass rush. They got really good corners who can cover. And when you look at the Los Angeles Chargers, I know all the talk is about Justin Herbert, and I understand. But he made a lot of great throws in the game. And when you look at the Chargers, they did a tremendous job building their team and getting it to the playoffs with Harbaugh out there. I give him a lot of credit. But they need running backs and they need wide receivers. And the good thing for them, I think that's probably two of the spots that you can really correct quickly. And that's, they're a slow football team, really well coached. They manage games through the roof, I think, most of the time. But they were overwhelmed with the speed of the Houston Texans, really on both sides of the ball.
And then what happened with Jordan Love in Philadelphia?
Well, he's been shaky all year long. You know, he's been beat up. I'm sure he's been playing. It's part of it. You know, you don't get to practice. You know, Boomer, you know, when you're a little beat up as a football, as a quarterback, you spend too much of your time during the week trying to feel good, and it's just not sharp. And he had that going on a lot this year. And the game against the Eagles, it really was that was his whole year. It was kind of like that. Just spotty, bad decisions, not good throws, throwing off his back foot, you know, just so it kind of ended the way it was all year. It was a rough year for him up there. And, you know, when you're kind of nicked the whole year, he got nicked in game one, the first game of the year down Philadelphia, down in Brazil. And it seems like he never really gotten that rhythm where we saw last year. So
Phil Simms in his regular weekly spot here, 8 a.m. on Wednesdays. The Simms Spotlight. So I when I first glance at Lions Commanders, I'm thinking, you know, the Lions are just going to absolutely crush them. I'm probably still going to stick with that. But when you're thinking about the game from a pressure standpoint and the way that Jaden Daniels handles pressure and the way that the Detroit Lions, the immense amount of pressure that they're going to have now with the one seed to get to the Super Bowl,
right.
Is there any route for you to a Commanders victory in that football game this weekend?
Well, yeah, there is. I mean, the first, it's just, and I hate doing this. I don't hate doing this, but the quarterback, he's the great equalizer. You know, Jaden Daniels is his movement, buying time to throw the football. He's really accurate. When people are open, he just doesn't miss them. And they, again, the coaching, Dan Quinn does a really good job for the whole team, but the offense is really well-schooled and very creative, and they got the players to make plays. So this game could be close. But, you know, Detroit, hey, they're well-coached, too. and they're rough, and they're ready to go. So I would be very surprised if Commanders could beat them, but the game could be close. So I'm going back to that Minnesota game. I was just so impressed with Aaron Glenn and how they played and how well they were coached. It was more than just they played hard. What they designed to do against the other team was spot on in every aspect. And I would think that'll be interesting to see. Are they going to have that same effect against the Washington Commanders? They haven't played them, but will they just be all over everything they're trying to do? That's what I'm trying to
say. I just think like if the Commanders are going to win that game, they're going to have to score 34 points because, you know, the Lions are going to put up 31 points.
Yeah.
I think on the Commander defense. I just want to – one other thing I want to ask you real quick about last week. There was a wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles who took out a book and started reading it on the sideline. Have you ever seen that before, or have you ever heard of that about A.J. Brown before?
I have not. Of course, I've never seen it. Listen, if he was reading a book on the sidelines, I think I heard you talk about it. Any time during the year, it would be out there already. So we know why he did that, because he wasn't getting the football thrown his way. Winning a playoff game is not good enough. Okay, that's not good enough. I got to have some catches. And so I always think of this. And I think you said it to me, Boomer, or you laughed about something with Bill Parcells, how he talked to everybody on the sidelines. I always go back to this. I just can't imagine what he would do if somebody did that on the team he was coaching. And it would be funny, because he would just destroy them. So,
I mean, could you imagine, like, if Bill McConkey were on the sideline and you started reading a book because he only caught one pass from you?
I will say this. You, especially me, I played in a different era, and I never, not once, ever had a receiver say anything negative to me about, you got to get me the ball more. Never. And, you know, I never thought about it like, oh, I feel bad for him. He was open twice and I missed him or whatever. I never had that conversation with a wide receiver once in my whole career.
Yeah, neither did I. All right, so real quickly, I want to talk to you about now. It's Lamar and Josh Allen, man. This is the game of the year all of a sudden. It was the game of the year, the Vikings and the Lions. That was a regular season game of the year because of the records, what they were playing for. But now this is for all the marbles. This is, in my belief, this is the go play Kansas City, because I think Kansas City will beat Houston. But this is a matchup made in heaven. This is football at its best. It's two players that have had two of their best career years, if not their best career years. To me, as you always point out, Baltimore is a big physical football team. Buffalo tends to be a little bit smaller on defense, a little bit more athletic, yes, a little bit faster. This is where brute force meets athletic ability. And I think in order to win the game, Josh Allen has to be what?
Well, he probably going to have to play close to perfect. That would be my first thought about it. And I do like the way they're trying to play in Buffalo. The game, you know, Josh Allen's being very smart and careful the way he is playing, too. He's not taking chances early in games, throwing the football. The running's really helped him out a lot. And you're right to say, Buffalo is, compared to the Baltimore Ravens, they are small. And the big thing is, can they stand up front on the defensive side to stop Derrick Henry? And, of course, now you got to watch Lamar, too, his running. I mean, Lamar against the Pittsburgh Steelers actually moved forward, moved to the right, then moved to the left, didn't like any of those positions, so he backpedaled backwards, and then he threw a pass that, you know, got 20 yards. So it's a great undertaking, I think, for the Buffalo Bills. And I think Baltimore's the better football team on paper and maybe on the field. We saw that, you know, weeks ago, how they manhandled the Bills. But the Bills are going to have to be sharp. I think they're going to have to score in the high 20s, low 30s to have a chance to win the game. Baltimore and Philadelphia are the two best teams left in the playoffs, in my eyes. And it wouldn't surprise me to see those two teams in the Super Bowl.
Interesting. Now, so not the Detroit Lions. You like even with the way that the Eagles played last week, you will take the Philadelphia Eagles over the Detroit Lions when that game is going to be in Detroit?
Yes. You know, right now, yes, I feel that way. Yes. Wow. I think, hey, you know, the offensive line, just that alone, and well, the defensive line, oh, the secondary, oh, they got a good running back in Saquon, oh, they got two great receivers. You know, it's always, show me the weak spot.
Yeah.
Besides the coaching of the Philadelphia Eagles.
You know what I think? I honestly believe that if Baltimore wins this game, which I'm leaning towards picking later on in the week, I think they're going to the Super Bowl. I think they're going to think about week one where they lost just barely to Kansas City. Kansas City's healthy now. They got all their wide receivers going. Everybody seems to be looking good except maybe Mecole Hardman, but most likely he'll be active for the game. Kansas City's a great team, and I will never take anything away from both Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes, but I just feel like this is Baltimore's year, the way Lamar played last week against Pittsburgh. I don't know. I felt like he was the fastest that I had ever seen him in that first half against Pittsburgh last week. It was amazing how quickly he was making decisions and taking off with the football.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. That's Lamar's way of really getting into the game, playing safe or whatever. Go back to the opening game of the year when they were in Kansas City. He was running and running and running into guys and trying to create the hits against people, because I think that would probably settle him down, and it worked for him really well, so that'll be interesting to see. But you go to that. I know you're going to bring up Jalen Hurts of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Listen, he's a very, very careful distributor of the football to the wide receivers. In other words, they got to be wide open. I don't know why sometimes he doesn't make certain throws, but when you're on a team that can control the game on both sides of the ball, it's kind of about how you have to play as a quarterback. So I'm not alarmed by the way he played last week. I think if he has to, he can open it up. And look, they got great guys to catch the football. So if they have to, I think they could throw the ball and still have a great effect on the game.
We were talking about the Lamar Jackson performance against the Steelers, and the Steelers have been in the news the last couple of days because of Mike Tomlin. We know how great of a coach right. Mike Tomlin is. We know that if he were available, there'd be every team with an opening would want to talk to him. But sometimes one guy in the same place could get stale. Do you believe that's what's going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Absolutely. I think what you're saying is right. Two, when I look at the Steelers, all I hear, and I read it too, whatever, the quarterback. You know, the quarterback is not really, to me, the big issue on the team. It's an overall lack of talent to win games like we saw this past weekend, or think they're going to make a deep run in the playoffs. There's no way. I mean, Russell Wilson, he was solid in the game, made some tremendous throws. And what about the defense? My gosh, we know Baltimore inside out. We can't stop them in anything we try to do. And for Mike Tomlin, sometimes the message, the guys can only hear it so many times. And I'm not surprised he wants to stay in Pittsburgh, or he's going to. But even for him to go somewhere else and start doing his thing with another team, I mean, it's going to be exciting for the players, and it's going to reinvigorate him too. I'm sure he still has the energy, but going to another team would change him, and I think would make his job easier. That's just, that's just the way I think. But this whole thing about Pittsburgh, and God, every team in the NFL, if you don't win a game, we need another quarterback. And to me, it's overall talent of the football team is their biggest reason why they can't go forward in the playoffs.
All right, last question for me, and this is regarding the Jets. They're interviewing everybody that they possibly can. I mean, I think they're up to like 33 people that they've interviewed. Do you believe, Aaron Glenn's probably going to get one of these jobs, whether it be New Orleans, whether it be the Raiders, whether it be the Jets. Do you believe that Matt Nagy deserves another opportunity to be a head coach, despite what anybody's perception of him may be because of what happened in Chicago?
Well, listen, all these interviews, I mean, come on, doesn't it get confusing? We got all these guys over there. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just wearing me out. I don't even pay attention. I don't even read it anymore. I don't know who they've interviewed. I lost track, 20 people ago. But Matt Nagy, I would say if I'm the Jets, he would not be the guy I would hire. I'll just keep it simple that way. He had some success, of course, down in Chicago, but I just think it would be better for the Jets to go somewhere else besides him. That would be my point.
Okay. So, is there someone on these lists that you stop paying attention to that you like for the Jets or not?
Man, hey, Gio, I've given up. I really have. I'm like, oh, God, come on. What are we doing? Who are we waiting on? Who have they not interviewed that they might think about hiring with the Jets?
Well, it'll be Aaron Glenn. You can see Steve Spagnuolo. They interviewed both of those guys. Matt Nagy's on that list. They're both still coaching. And then, of course, you have Brian Flores, whose team just finished. Do you think Brian Flores makes sense for the New York Jets?
Listen, I'm a big fan of his. I like what he does. I don't think he'll be the New York Jets head coach. Steve Spagnuolo or Aaron Glenn, I would say I would be really happy if either one of those two. If you're a Jet fan, you should be. And for me, I follow both teams up here in the New York area. So I think either one of those guys would be a great hire by the New York Jets. I think they both are ready. Spagnuolo, he's done it before. He can correct the mistakes he made the first time he was a head coach. And for Aaron Glenn, I think he's proven he can take guys that are not great and still make them really good players on the field. And I think that's an important aspect for any head coach.
All right, Phil, excited to see you tomorrow. I know that feeling is not mutual, but we're going to have a good night.
Oh, I can't wait to see you. You and I, man, we'll sit together. I got a bad foot, you got a bad knee, so we're some pair.
This is great.
Just please do me a favor. Can you please wear a sock?
Shut up, Boomer.
Just wear a sock on that foot of yours, all right? Yeah, he shows up to his appearance on Sunday night. He doesn't wear a sock, and I got to look at these meat hook foot.
Oh.
I mean, it's just...
My foot looks like the Nutty Professor and Eddie Murphy's. His feet blow up, man. I can't even get a shoe on. And you're right, Boomer. I did yesterday. I put a sock on my foot. So
thank
I was like,
God.
Okay, I think I'll do that. Yeah.
Especially
okay.
with the food that we're going to be eating and the great meal that these guys are going to put together for us. The last thing I want to do is look at your nasty feet.
Wow. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Hey. All right, can't wait to see you guys. We'll talk. We'll see what goes on, and it'll be fun. So thanks for having me on today.
All right, Phil. Take care. Right, Phil Sims every Wednesday at 8 a.m. The Sims Spotlight brought to you by Balance of Nature Whole Food Supplements. Visit balanceofnature.com. So we've got 8 quarterbacks left in the NFL postseason, do we not?
Yeah.
We've got 8 quarterbacks left.
That's good.
7. Out of those 8, first-round draft choices.
Oh, yeah.
The only one who was not is Jalen Hurts, who was 53rd overall in the second round.
Yeah.
All right, so that's...
People tend to forget that Jared Goff was the number one overall pick by the Rams.
So don't steal my thunder now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't steal my thunder.
All right, I'm not stealing any thunder.
So, out of the 7 out of those 8, 2 of them were the number one overall pick.
All right, there
Matt
you go.
Stafford, Jared Goff. 2 of them were the number 2 overall pick.
Why are you yelling?
Because I'm fired up about quarterbacks.
All right.
You should love that.
I'm fired up too, but you don't have to yell.
I'm sorry. 2 of them.
Oh.
Is that a little bit lower?
Okay.
2 of them
yes.
were the number 2 overall pick in C.J. Stroud and Jaden Daniels. And then the other 2 that are left, or other 3 that are left on the list, Josh Allen, number 7 overall, Patrick Mahomes, number 10 overall, and Lamar Jackson, of course, 32nd overall.
So, but the point being, if you're a top 10 quarterback, I mean, you could change the franchise's trajectory immediately, assuming that you have those abilities that all the teams are looking for. And I don't think any of these quarterbacks coming out right now today are going to be Bo Nix next year. I don't.
Yeah, well, but at the same time, there was a lot of these. So... C.J. Stroud, Lamar Jackson, out of all these guys that I mentioned that were picked first, second, or in the first round, did you feel like any of them were 100% can't miss?
100% Josh Allen.
Well, you love Josh Allen.
100% Josh Allen and 100% Jaden Daniels.
Okay, so that's 2 of the 8.
And Mahomes, I'm sorry, of course.
Right. Mahomes. But the point is that, guys like Jared Goff.
I need to have guys this out like, a little bit more now.
Guys like C.J. Stroud.
Right.
Lamar, obviously, there were many, many people that were, the classic Bill Polian take that got him roasted for months on Lamar Jackson should not be a quarterback in the NFL. He should be a wide receiver. A lot of those guys were saying the same things about these guys that have had great careers, won MVPs and, got their teams deep into the playoffs. So it's become the story and the whatever you want to say around the first round quarterback has just been so much more of the negative than the positive. And it's almost like you can't draft these guys at the top. It sets you back. Why are you going to try to draft a quarterback again at the top of the draft? Because when you hit, everything changes.
You know, if I'm sitting here right now, Cam Ward would be the number one guy just based on what I've seen. And he does have explosiveness in his game. You could see it. You could see the athleticism. You could see all the things that like Joe Milton had up in New England, that Anthony Richardson had when he came out of the combine. That's an explosive football player. Shedeur Sanders, a little bit more refined, a little bit more, maybe the expectations because of his dad and everything else. There's that mental side of it that Patrick Mahomes had because his dad was a baseball player and he'd been around professional baseball all his life. So I think that there is something to be said about that part of Shedeur Sanders. But there's also an entitlement thing that you may have to deal with Shedeur.
Mm. Yeah, so
I mean, that's the thing that I worry about. I worry about it, you know, he's got a decent arm. You know, he can seem like he can read defenses. He played against lesser competition. There wasn't a lot of pressure. I mean, you know, he had the best player in football, Travis Hunter, to throw to. I mean, like all those things. But I don't know. I just, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, he came out and said, yeah, I'd love to be the quarterback of the Cowboys as well. I'm like, well, who do you think you are?
Well,
I mean, like, you could,
did he say that?
Yeah, he said, I wouldn't mind going to the Cowboys. I mean, like, all right, they already have Dak Prescott there and they're paying him 4 years, 100 or four years, right? So, $160 million or something like that, whatever it is.
Yeah, I didn't see him say that. It'd be disappointing if he came out and just said it that way, but. But anyway, so one of the takes I was proudest about recently is when I offered up my NFL comp to Cam Ward to Phil Sims.
Okay.
I said, this guy reminds me of Steve McNair. And Phil said, absolutely, spot on, you're right. And it would be interesting if Cam Ward went as a Steve McNair clone in a way, goes to Tennessee with the first overall pick. So what is the Shedeur Sanders NFL comp? I'll give you one because I saw him play a lot. Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay, I mean, a fine quarterback.
But do you agree or not?
Teddy Two Gloves.
Teddy Two Gloves, that's right, as Lamar Jackson just called him, reminded us of that nickname this week because he's playing in the cold. Do you think that is a fair comparison?
I think he's better than Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay.
Coming out of college, he's a little bit better than that. I don't know about all the trappings around him, his expectations, his entitlement. You know, I know he's working with Tom Brady, which is a good thing to have going for you if Tom Brady is supporting you about working out and being serious about the job. I mean, you know, it's going to be an interesting pick for the Giants if they're sitting there at number three and Shedeur Sanders is there.
So Eddie says in my ear, an NFL comp to Shedeur Sanders, Chad Pennington. And he says, really that weak?
Well, similar arm strength, similar game smarts, tough.
Played with a great wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and Chad, if Chad didn't get hurt, he would have gone on to have a really great NFL career, but he just kept getting hurt. But I could see that because, you know, Shedeur doesn't run with the ball a lot. You know, Chad didn't run with the ball a lot. I mean, they can, but
just a high football IQ also.
And again, I say Shedeur being Deion Sanders' son gives him a leg up in terms of expectations of him of his own self and going on the field and feeling confident that he can do it.
Yeah, and the entitlement thing with Shedeur, I think, is I'm coming around on the other end of that because we know that Deion Sanders is all about glitz and in your face and entertainment. He's been his entire career. But the other thing he was during his career was a Hall of Famer and great at what he did and understood that you had to put the work in. And even though there's a lot of things that he did where you felt like, as the Oregon head coach said, you know, more about clicks than winning football games. And, you know, you have examples of that. I can't imagine that Deion Sanders doesn't know and does not relay the fact that, hey, Shedeur, you can't just show up and flash your watch to the crowd and think that you're going to be some superstar in the NFL.
Yeah.
You got to put in the work. You're a rookie. You got to zip it. You got to do everything to prove to your teammates you're the guy. I actually think it's way more of a positive than a negative.
Well,
to have Dion in your corner.
That's part of what I'm talking about. The kid has grown up around it. You know what I mean? So he shouldn't be intimidated by it.
Yeah.
And I just, man, if the Giants get him and they start him on week one, I don't know what it's going to look like.
You can't do that. You can't start him week one. That's why you go stopgap guy for a little bit. Have him sit there, see how the season's going, and then people will be calling for him, of course, and maybe, you know, by week six or something like that, he ends up playing.
Well, I think there's also a couple things going on here. Even though, like, the Titans are number one and the Browns are number two, and both of them need quarterbacks, you know, Deion's already, you know, said that there are certain teams I don't want my son playing for. So he's, you know, he may be doing that so he can get him to the Giants, or maybe he can get him to one of these other teams, the Saints or somebody, the Raiders. Maybe he's trying to do that. Maybe he becomes the head coach of the Raiders. Who knows?
Mm. I think Ben Johnson's going to end up there. I think that's what Tom Brady got involved in. I think that's everything seems to be pointing to that.
Who's the GM that goes with him? I guess the guy Agnew from Detroit?
Yeah, it's a possibility. I'm not sure. I don't know the entire history of Ben Johnson and guys he's worked with in the front office. A lot of those things are hard to find because it's so incestuous and guys coach everywhere. But I'm sure it'll be someone that he has worked with before.
All right, so that means it's like a Shane and Dable thing.
Yeah, or, yeah, yeah, it could be. If it's Ray Agnew, certainly it could be. And there's other candidates there in Detroit as well that, yes, it could be one thing.
You take a look at what Detroit has done since Dan Campbell has gotten there. The way that they drafted, the way that they made trades, you know, they swung the big trade initially, Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford, and they got a couple draft picks. And what they turned those draft picks in and the roster that they have, and they built it around, you know, a quarterback that really not, everybody wasn't really sure about him. Like, he took a team to the Super Bowl, so you got to be sure that he can actually do it, which he can. And now he's played his best football ever for Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson in Detroit. But their draft picks, like Penny Sewell, Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, I mean, it's unbelievable what they've done and how they built that team. Aiden Hutchinson.
Well, that's how you reload every year. I mean, and that's what the Philadelphia Eagles have done as well. I mean, the draft is the most important thing. I mean, it always is. And obviously hitting on the number one position in the draft is the most important thing. But, you know, the rest of the draft's important, too. Look no further the difference between the Philadelphia Eagles and the New York Giants than how they have drafted the last couple of years. Go through those drafts, the Howie Roseman drafts against the Joe Shane drafts, and then come out of that saying who was better. I think it's 100% consensus. We know who drafted better. So, yeah, those are the quarterbacks we're going to be talking about. And it seems like Cam Ward, at this point, consensus number one to the Titans. And then we'll see what happens from there. Could the dark horse come out, the out-of-nowhere guy? What's going on with your computer? I'm about to have a seizure over there.
Yeah, I don't know what's
going
on.
This thing is flipping out.
Something wrong
it's
with
like
it.
Like Japanese anime.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that.
Whoa. All right, so is there the out of nowhere guy?
Well,
that happens every year.
Is that Jackson Dart? Is that
Quinn Ewers?
Quinn Ewers. I mean, like any of these. I don't think it's Quinn Ewers, but I just there'll be somebody that will move up, you know, through the combine, through their private workouts and in you know interviews and things of that nature. So I don't know who that player is at the moment. I do think that these two guys are going to hold at the top of the draft. There's no question about it, and like I said, the Giants at number three are going to have an interesting situation. And it will be interesting to see if Cleveland, I don't think Cleveland or Tennessee will be trading out. But does Tennessee believe that Will Levis has something else left that we haven't seen? I don't think so. I think Brian Callahan's going to like, I want a new quarterback down here.
Yeah, I mean, and the Cleveland Browns are obviously even more so in the market for another quarterback after Deshaun Watson re-tears his Achilles tendon, which is...
He's done. He's not playing for the Browns again. Forget that.
I mean, it's over. Well, it's certainly over now. I mean, how do you re-tear it? Just being a jerk?
I don't know what he did. You know, it's... who knows? Maybe he tripped and fell. I don't know. It's a weird situation, but they owe him $96 million, guaranteed, no matter what. Ugh. No matter what. They bribed him to come to Cleveland. They gave him all that money and just basically went backward.
Yeah, I mean, where that guy was to where he is now is just amazing. You know, all that winning he did at Clemson, you know, coming out and being that Texans quarterback and having, I mean, he was just putting up ridiculous numbers and their defenses weren't good and he was throwing for a million yards, keeping the team in games. And from there to all the accusations, to going up to Cleveland, to getting hurt, and his career essentially being over is amazing.
He will go down as the guy who made the most money per play in NFL history because he had to sit out a year and still got paid. He's going to sit out another year. He had to sit out 11 games, and they fined him $5 million for that.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be impossible to recreate that unless somebody, like, somebody signs a $300 million guaranteed deal, then plays one game, and then...
Yeah, I don't know. Unless somebody gets hurt.
Loses, like, both their legs.
It'd be like Aaron Rodgers, you know, getting hurt for the Jets, but, you know, he did come back and he played a full season. What's really important is that they get the general manager right. The general manager has got to be right as well. He doesn't have to be a big-time personality guy. He just got to be a guy that has had a track record of some success in the NFL somewhere else. You know, Joe Douglas had success. He was basically unknown when they hired him away from Philadelphia. And to me, Joe did a good job here. I'm not going to kill Joe except with the, you know, maybe the Zach Wilson's draft. Everything else, I think, you know, actually he did reasonably well and stayed quiet. He was below the radar, which is the kind of guy that I want for the Jets because I want that alpha male to be the face of that franchise, to actually give the franchise itself a shot in the arm and also give the fan base something to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly how they're handling this, whether they're going to hire the GM first. I mean, at first, I think it's nuts to not hire the GM first. But then again, when we talked about getting a guy like Mike Vrabel, if you had a shot at him, which you never did once the Patriots fired Gerard Mayo, then you bring in that guy and then say, okay, let's find the guy that'll work with Mike Vrabel. I don't know if there's anybody else out there that the Jets are considering that they would hire that head coach to then decide who he wanted to work with as a general manager. And so now I'm back to hopefully they could find that general manager first who is then going to sign off on that head coach.
All right, so if you are going to go down the path of, okay, let's go steal people that are successful in other places, because that's basically what's going on here in the NFL, then it would be Borgonzi and of course, Matt Nagy would make a lot of sense.
Shents.
That would make a lot of sense because obviously they know each other. They're coming from Kansas City, which has been the most successful franchise over the last 5 years, due in large part because of the head coach and the quarterback, the special quarterback they have. But those guys have been around. They're the ones that, you know, that have had a coach, Patrick Mahomes, straight up. I don't think that there has been any drop off from when Eric Bieniemy left to when Matt Nagy came back, because it was Matt Nagy's he was the offense coordinator before.
So you're going Nagy today now. I asked you yesterday, Nagy or Nagy. You said Nagy. Now you're going Nagy. You're confusing the hell out of me.
I don't know. Whatever.
No, I want to know
it's
what
like
it is.
It's Hartenstein and Hartenstein.
No, it's Hartenstein, actually.
Stein.
It was Hartenstein. I need to know where we're going. We need to be on a united front with this.
I'm saying Nagy.
But you haven't been all morning.
Well, it's early. I could change.
So we're saying we, as Boomer and Geo, united front, are going Matt Nagy, not Matt Nagy.
Al.
Matt Nagy.
There you go.
Okay, but that's AI.
Matt Nagy.
Yeah, that's Matt Nagy.
We'll put in Boomer's name. Does it
pronounce? Actually, I Googled, how do you pronounce Matt Nagy? Nag. And it came up as this, like a pronunciation guide for his name somehow.
Okay.
Matt Nagy.
All right, I was always a Nagy guy. But then I hear Nagy a lot. And we can't be doing this back and forth. It's like Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, well, Matt Nagy does have two Super Bowls. You know, much like Steve Spagnuolo, is it Spagnuolo or Spagnola?
Spagnuolo.
All right.
Spags.
Let's just call him Spags.
Yeah, just call
this guy
Spags.
Nags and call him Spags.
Nags and Spags. Yeah, why not? Who probably will be on their way to another AFC championship
but
game.
But again, they are successful coaches and front office people that are with a successful franchise. And, you know, even Andy Reid had to leave Philadelphia and he had to get another start in Kansas City. You know, the moment that Philadelphia decided it was done, guess what? He got a job immediately in Kansas City. So, I mean, these things happen to all these coaches. I mean, Bill Belichick was fired. You know, Bill Parcells has been fired. I mean, they've all been fired. It's just the nature of the business and things turn stale. And eventually, you know, teams are going to move on from their coaches because their fan bases are restless. That's exactly what happened in Chicago with Nags.
Mm-hmm.
I would just think if you told me it was going to be Borgonzi and Nags, I wouldn't be disappointed with that. If you had told me that it's going to be, I'm trying to think who maybe Brian Flores has crossed paths with, maybe Dimitroff and Flores, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I think that these are the types of pairings that I would believe that the Jets would be looking for, because the last thing you want to do is, I don't think you want to put two guys together that have never met.
No, you can't do that. I mean, that would be very Jet-like if that were the case. But then again, if that is the case, then you got to hire the general manager first.
I think if you sat up there and you had Borgonzi, right, and you had Nagy, you could sit there very comfortably as the owner of the New York Jets and say, we are hiring two people that are coming from the preeminent organization in terms of winning in the league. Now, the other two organizations that have won a lot, they just haven't won Super Bowls, over the last 5 years since 2018, and it correlates to the fact that they drafted quarterbacks that year, are the Bills and the Ravens. The Bills and the Ravens know what they're doing. That's why Joe Shane got a job. That's why Brian Daboll got a job. That's why you would look within the Bills organization and see who's a part of the decision-making and scouting. Those are all the reasons why they're interviewing people from those organizations as well. But that's really what's going on here. Like, I want a piece of what Kansas City has. How do I get that piece? And here are guys that have been in that building for an extended period of time. They've seen how it's been done. They have had to fix a roster over and over and over again. Once they gave Patrick Mahomes that huge contract, they gave Chris Jones that huge contract. They had to let Legarius Sneed go, one of their best defensive backs. And these are the things that I think people like Woody Johnson, Jerry Jones, are all looking at when it comes to, okay, what is the pair that I can find that can recreate the success that they're having in Kansas City?
If Borgonzi ends up being hired, that's going to be hilarious, because the second that I saw his name, I was like, that's the guy who's coming here, because I could just hear the phone calls. I could hear Joe Beningo just because of his name and people calling up and being like, what a terrible draft by Borgonzi. Honestly, this Borgonzi. And I said that. The first time I saw it, there's been 50,000 GM candidates. And if he ends up coming here, then like maybe I'm a soothsayer.
Right. Maybe you are. But I'm just giving you an example of how I think the Jets have got to go about this. I mean, the Giants went about it that way. I'm not saying that it worked out the first year. And maybe things will work out because of the success of the draft this past year. But they brought in two guys from the Bills. And because the Bills have had so much success, have drafted really well, especially on the defensive line and the offensive line, they've made the right free agent pickups. They knew when to get rid of Steph Diggs. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that have gone on here that the Bills have done, and you want to try to recreate some of that success. But the problem is you've got to find the quarterback, man. You got to find the playmaking quarterback that makes everybody just look like they know what they're doing. So when Jaden Daniels has the ball in his hands and it's 3rd and 10 and you're in the fourth quarter and you're on the road and the people are screaming and you can't recreate that in practice, and somehow this kid is just unbelievably unflappable and he makes plays. I mean, that's just the human being playing the position. You're giving him the play calls, the play sheets, and the roadmap to victory. He's got to execute it. So both of these franchises around here have got to find that type of guy before anybody's going to have any success.
Well, it's the most important. I mean, it really is. The head coach is right there behind it, but the most important is that guy. And bad coaching staffs can ruin quarterbacks, but I think when it's so special, and a guy like Jaden Daniels, a guy like Patrick Mahomes, I mean, obviously pairing with Andy Reid made it a dynasty. But really, it's if you have that guy that's so good, that's the thing you pick first and foremost.
And look at how like Jared Goff, Ben Johnson, and Dan Campbell are. You know, that didn't get off to the greatest of starts.
Well, he wasn't the Ben Johnson was not the offensive coordinator when they first started there. You know, he took over at like year two or three of Dan Campbell's tenure. I think it was like Jim Bob Cooter back in the day.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
But Ben Johnson did not start year one. He was there on the staff, but he did not start year one as the offensive coordinator for them. And then when he did and then became the offensive coordinator, things went to a different level. And we'll see maybe if Ben Johnson goes to Dallas. You know, that is now one of the things that there's some, if there's smoke, there's fire.
Now to baseball, and we did get some significant developments with the Pete Alonso saga on Thursday as his camp reportedly rejected the Mets' reported offer of 3 years for somewhere between $68 and $70 million, including opt-outs. Now, the Mets were said to have had a willingness to go slightly higher on the total amount without deferrals, but I guess Alonso's camp has decided they weren't interested in that.
I'll tell you what, they really don't want him.
Seems that way.
I mean, they have their heart set on a certain number, and they will not pay him, and they will not go over that. And it's really, it's kind of a little bit disheartening for us Met fans. I mean, I'd love to have seen him in this lineup to see what it would look like. And maybe he would have had a bounce back year, but at the moment, it doesn't look like he's going to be here. And if he's not here, that's, you know, somewhat disappointing.
Yeah, it is, but it's all because of what happened last year in that season. He would have gotten more money, maybe an extra year, if he had put together one of his regular Pete Alonso seasons, and he didn't. And David Stearns, you always talk about ruthless. David Stearns, doesn't matter who you are, if you fit the profile of a guy that he doesn't want on the team, which is a declining past 30-year-old player who had his worst season, I don't care if there's polar bear t-shirts out there. I don't care if there's bobbleheads that are scheduled. I don't care if all the Alonso jerseys are going away. I'm here to win, and I don't think that that guy is worth this, so see ya. So, I mean, those are the really, really tough decisions that you have to make as a general manager, and I appreciate it. I mean, I'm gonna miss him, and I think that home run, I thought that home run, I was caught up in the emotions of it. I thought the home run in Milwaukee, I was like, he's definitely got to come back now. But
that was also before signing Juan Soto. I was telling my nephew Randy yesterday, we were talking about this. I said, I still find it so hard to believe that they gave Juan Soto $750 million.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not a five-tool player. He's a great hitter, of course. You know what I mean? What?
Yeah. No, it's just, I'm just interested.
I mean, Aaron Judge.
Poking holes in Juan Soto.
Aaron Judge, to me, is worth every penny because he plays great defense. He's got a great arm. You know, he could steal bases. I think they tell him not to steal bases. They don't want him getting hurt or anything like that. Like, Aaron Judge is the player. That is the baseball player.
Different stage of his career, different age.
Right.
I know, but I'm saying, he you know, Juan Soto's not, his hitting's going to be fine. But his fielding, his arm strength, all of that other stuff, that's not going to get any better. That's what it is.
What happened to you?
No. He had this take for forever. It's the money. He always liked Juan Soto as a player.
Too
it's just the money.
Got it.
But, you know, but we did this for weeks, and it's not just about giving him the money for everything he does on the field. It's about taking him from the Yankees. It's about Steve Cohen planting his flag in the ground. It's about Steve Cohen getting a downstate casino license. It's having that guy there. It's about all of those things.
So, I know. It's a business decision, and it's not my money. I don't care, but it's still hard for me to fathom.
Well, fathom it, man, because he's there.
$750 million for what I think is a great hitter and just a, so-so player.
Well, hopefully he'll win you over once we get to the regular season.
You want to see a real baseball player, so Judge is the everyday baseball player. To me, that is the best player in baseball. Shohei Ohtani, last year, injured elbow coming off of the Tommy John surgery. He's a 50-50 guy. That is ridiculous. That's a guy who cares. That's a guy who actually impacts the game in so many different ways. That's not who Juan Soto is.
Hey, while we're on this, you think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame? Let's get it all out.
By the way, he'll impact the game on the mound coming up this year, Ohtani. Probably you're not getting another 50-50 season out of him while he's pitching as well. They're going to cut down on the base stealing if he's back to being a regular in the rotation.
Yeah, but you get 200 strikeouts.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Impact again in a different way, obviously. The Mets, though, are going to bring back Jesse Winker. Sounds like 1 year, $8 million, so you'll have him back in the fold. All this, as it's happening yesterday, you know, Sal ends up going on his Baseball Night in New York show in SNY, and I guess prepared to quickly move on from Alonso, the Met, as it turns out.
On second thought, forget about what I said about Alonso. I was playing checkers. David Stearns, you were playing chess. I didn't think there was a better option than Pete. I was wrong. Go get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Imagine Soto and Vlad hitting back-to-back in the Mets lineup. Yes!
So now he's got them maybe trading for Vlad Jr. instead of waiting for him to become a free agent.
I think that they'll sign him. I don't think that they're going to get him in a trade. I would be shocked if they got him in a trade. I'd be happy. But I would be
so you
very
think Toronto's going to extend him?
No, I think they're going to they're going
to sign him as a free agent.
No, no, no. I think what's going to happen is that they're going to start this season. They're going to see how it goes,
yeah.
And if they're playing well, they're going to hope that him growing up there in the organization and giving him a big offer is going to keep him there. And they're going to try to win next year. If they're bad by the trade deadline, they're going to trade him. And I think they're going to try their ass off to keep him in the offseason if they keep him through the end of the season. But then Steve Cohen's going to do what he did with Juan Soto, and he's going to blow everybody away. And David Stern's going to say, yes, this is the guy that I want because that guy fits who we give the money to. We give the money to guys like that. We don't give the money to guys like Pete Alonso. Joining us in studio, two-time Super Bowl champion. He's in the Patriots Hall of Fame. That is Vince Wilfork.
This is not Vince Wilfork.
What do you mean?
This is not Vince Wilfork.
This is not Vince Wilfork. This looks like Vince Wilfork. Oh, wow. He got skinny.
This is a male model.
He got skinny.
He has turned himself into a male model. Look at him.
He looks great, man. It definitely is jarring when
you have that
memory of you on the football field and how great you look now and dropping all the weight. And he's here on behalf of Tums. There's a fantasy food ball pool created in partnership with DraftKings, the first of its kind free online game, allows fans to draft their top food and drinks following weekly food-related themes in a free shot at winning a share of $40,000. That's a pretty cool thing we'll talk more about. But hey, man, you're here at a good time for us because there's a lot going on with your former team, the New England Patriots. And they fire Gerard Mayo.
Yeah.
They hire Mike Vrabel. Yeah. What's your reaction to all that?
Well, first of all, I love, you know, the Patriots organization. I love Gerard. Gerard is like a brother to me. And I love Vrabel because, you know, I played with Vrabel. Vrabel was, you know, linebacker coach in Houston when I went to Houston. So all this is family to me. I just think when it came down to the whole thing with Gerard Mayo, I mean, he was in a lose-lose situation for me, you know, and people have to realize he inherited a team that Bill Belichick had. So what did you expect to happen? It's, you know, Bill can do anything with him for 3-4 years, and all of a sudden you get a first-year coach that's going out there and you expect for him to do what? So I didn't get it. I don't understand that. But at the end of the day, I'm glad Vrabel landed there because I do think he's a hell of a coach. I said, people could tell me and ask me about Mike Vrabel as a player, and I'll tell you what, he was a coach on the field. I mean, he sounded, he acted, he knew offensively, defensively on the field. So I know firsthand that he's going to come there with a mindset. And it's going to be respected, and he's going to win some football game. I'm just happy that the New England Patriots ended up with this guy since they, you know, fired Gerard. But I think they're in good hands with this guy.
You know, Vince, what I think happened is that the Jets were really coveting Mike Vrabel. They really, really wanted him. And Bob Kraft was up there thinking, man, if he goes to the Jets, I'm going to have the norovirus for like 5 years throwing up just looking at him in green.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, the timing of everything really landed at the feet of Gerard Mayo.
Yeah.
Now, you were teammates with him as well, too, right?
Yeah.
So
right.
You saw both ends of this. When you were a young guy, you came into the league as a rookie that was '04. So that was a Super Bowl year for you.
Correct.
And that's when Vrabel was at his height.
Yeah.
And was a team captain and a leader and everything. Mm-hmm. And then he left.
Yep.
And then obviously Gerard Mayo ends up coming in and he becomes a team captain.
Right.
Right. So you saw all of this. So that's kind of like the human side of everything. But at the end of the day, I think that Mike Vrabel's inheriting a good situation right now.
Yes. I mean, they have a quarterback, right?
Yes.
You know, in this league, you have to be able to have a quarterback. That's just what it is. You could surround that guy with some players and playmakers. You could play great defense and, you know, supporting cast around him. So he's coming into a good situation with knowing that at least that part is taken care of. Now, being able to fill a roster with some guys that can play football, that's going to be the challenge. That is going to be if Mike feels that it's not good enough, he has to make some decisions there. You have to be able to be competitive at this level. And what we've seen for the past four leading up when Bill, they just wasn't good enough. However you slice, they wasn't good enough. And some of those players are still there. So it comes, the question is, when is enough where you basically have to come in, clean house and start over. And you have to ask the Kraft this, how much patience do you have to rebuild? Because it don't happen like it's college in 2-3 years if you don't get it done. It don't work like that. You, when you was with Bill Belichick and you brought Bill in, you trusted Bill. You gave Bill time to build a championship level team. And he did that for 2 decades. But what happened? You gave him time at the beginning. Bill was coming in off of Cleveland and off of the Jets. And, you know, so it wasn't like he was coming in on a high horse. No, he was picking a losing coach. So, yeah. But they was committed to change and rebuilding. And Bill did that for 20 years. And it's a similar situation. Where you at now is, do you have the time and are you willing to give the time what's needed to rebuild?
Talking to Vince Wilfork here on the Fan and CBS Sports Network here on behalf of Tums. How come you're not on one of these national pregame shows? My goodness, are you pretty good at this?
I love my schedule. Okay. I could drop in and make some appearances, but I love my schedule.
Are you living in Texas now?
Or? I'm back and forth from Texas and Florida.
Okay. Yeah.
So when Bill Belichick was linked first to the North Carolina job, just as a football fan observer in the media, I was like, there's just no way. He's trying to get some interest from the NFL, but they ends up taking the job. Yeah. As a former Bill Belichick player, when you saw him go to North Carolina, what'd you think?
At first, I had no idea what he was doing. I'm like, Bill in college? And later to find out about his father with North Carolina, I said, okay, makes sense. You know, and I always thought Bill will set up something for his son, his legacy in college football with his son. And I think that's what he's doing. Me personally, I would love to see Bill come back to the NFL, get the record. Mm. That's me personally. That's me being selfish this close for him to get that all-time winning record coach. I would love to see him do that, but I don't know if that's on his radar or not right now. But, you know, good luck with him. It's going to be interesting, but I think, no, Saban and Bill Belichick share the same mind frame, you know what I mean? And they know how to build teams and build organizations. So I think Bill will be okay building North Carolina to what he sees fit as a winning culture and see what happens after that.
You know, it's amazing to me that it seems like nobody wanted him. And supposedly a number of his representatives reached out to a few teams.
Right.
And everybody said, either we're not ready to discuss this or we don't want you. I mean, like, if the Jets wanted legitimacy and credibility, yeah, and he wanted the Jets,
yeah,
would that be, like, the weirdest thing that you could ever imagine?
It would have. Yes. It's like going against everything that we've known of Bill Belichick and the Jets relationship.
Can you tell us what he would tell you before you were getting ready to play
the
Jets?
But you know what? Honestly, you know, the thing is, Bill never once, I remember sitting and ever told the team what his beef was with the Jets. You know, it was just like one of those things, like, you come here, like, okay, we hate the Jets. Okay. Win the division. We hate the Jets. Okay. But then, you know, you read things about Bill and the Jets firing, never was a head coach for one day. And it's like, okay. So it was never nothing needed to be said when we played the Jets. And I think everybody just felt that way. We knew it was just a different beef when it came to the Jets. Not only they're in the division, but it was the Jets. So, and then we rolled with it. Like I said, it was nothing he never told us.
But it's shocking that not one team wanted to even talk to him, other than the Falcons last year, who decided to go with Raheem Morris.
But that's very shocking, because I would have thought that the Giants, you know, the history he had with the Giants, mm-hmm, and the Mara family, I would have thought that would have been a place he would have landed. They need a head coach. He would have been perfect fit.
Yeah, we kind of linked him there for a long time, and then they end up, once he took the North Carolina job, we're like, they're going to keep Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, and they did.
Yeah.
That was that. We always thought he would come back.
And even last year when you had the L.A. Chargers available, but they went and got Harbaugh.
Which was turned out to be good.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But, you know, I was looking at, me being Bill, I was looking at that. I'm like, you know, that would be an ideal spot for me. I don't need, you know, a lot of years. I have a quarterback. I got a pretty good system. The team pretty good. It's just a little few missing pieces. I can win there, right? But, you know, he went Harbaugh, which is cool. But Like I said, I just rather see. I want to see it.
You know, it's amazing to me. I was looking back at your career. So you get there in 2004. You win a Super Bowl your rookie year. You got all these maniacs in this locker room. And you got this coach. And I'm just wondering about, like, the relationships and just the different things that probably – you could probably tell stories until the cows come home. I heard a story the other day that Mike Vrabel I don't know if you were there yet, but Bill Belichick was talking about defense and linebackers, and he kept showing the New York Giants and – Lawrence Taylor and Carl Banks that are there. Yeah. And supposedly Vrabel dressed in a New York Giants uniform and came out to practice. Were you there for that?
I wasn't there for that, but trust me, I've heard a lot of stories about, you know, things of that nature. But, you know, one thing Bill always tried to do is just, you know, he had a special group of guys in New York, you know, with Lawrence Taylor and Pepper Johnson and Carl Banks and those guys, and they played this defense pretty damn good, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he used to show us a lot of film on these guys, and we understood what he was doing. So I can only imagine. And being Mike Vrabel, understanding who Mike is a class clown. Like, I mean, he would speak his mind. He don't care if you like it or not. He don't care if you Bill or not. He's going to say what he has to say. And, you know, that's one thing I love about him. He is a true, true leader. And like I said, I could see him saying, well, Bill, F you. We don't want to hear about that. I can see him saying that too. You know, like, well, he always has something up his sleeve, right? So, but that's the type of person Vrabel is. I mean, he's a hell of a person. He's well-respected. He's going to say what's on his mind. He's going to put the team first. He's going to coach his tail off. I tell you that because, like I say, playing with him and playing basically for him in Houston, I just understand the guy, where he's coming from. And he's going to put team first, and he's going to know how to win games.
We're here with the great Vince Wilfork, who is promoting Tums. I'm an acid reflux heartburn guy. I love myself some Tums. Yeah. And the fantasy football pool where you can draft food-related items. And it says January 27th to February 9th, you're drafting New Orleans foods for this pool. If you have the number one overall pick in the New Orleans food draft, where are you going?
Oh, man, me personally, I'm a boudin guy.
What?
I'm a boudin.
Boudin?
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is.
I don't know what that is.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
See, I mean, a lot of people don't. You have to. Anybody that's in Louisiana, when I say boudin, they know what I'm talking about.
It's like an oxtail type of thing?
No, it's like
a jambalaya.
It's like a rice. It's like a rice and meat and veggies mixed in this casing, like a sausage casing.
Oh.
Stuffed it. Yeah, it's boudin. Yeah, yeah. When you finish, read about boudin.
I will, because I would have gone either beignet or muffaletta, depending on where I'm at.
I'm a big beignet guy.
Yeah,
beignet, love a good beignet.
But
yeah.
I like something with substance. So
yeah, so muffaletta.
Well,
yeah,
used to like a lot more with substance. Oh, I can tell you that. Yeah. I mean, at your at the height of your weight, the heaviest you played was how much?
About 365.
Now, I asked you about Ted Washington, who played with the Buffalo Bills, San Francisco. He got around a little bit. And that guy was how much?
Ted had to be about 400.
400?
I mean, but what I tell people is, for one, he's the greatest nose tackle of all time. I mean, true nose tackle, greatest of all time, Ted Washington. So I watched a lot of film on Ted, learning how to be a nose tackle, you know. And he was just a big dude. Ted is 6'5". So he carried it well, but when you're next to him, he's a mountain of a man.
He was a wide load, man.
Yeah, he was a big guy. Like, so I have to say he was pushing 400, but he carried it well, you know.
So you were a nose tackle and a defensive tackle. You were drafted as a defensive tackle out of college, and then you go to the Patriots. They make you a nose tackle. Yeah,
turn me into a nose tackle.
All right. So what's the difference? I know what the difference. I'm just trying to say, like, what the biggest difference between being a nose tackle and a defensive tackle is what?
Two gap. Well, two nose tackles, two gap. And what I did in my whole career before I got to New England, I was a defensive tackle. I was a one sap. I was a penetrator, one gapper. That means if I'm in A gap, that's my gap. Well, no matter where it goes, I'm in that gap. I got to get. When I got to New England, I became a true nose tackle, which is, you know, two gapper. Well, I'm in charge of both A gaps, you know. It's not
either side of the center, but either side. But you can't get pushed one way.
I can't get pushed one way. I have to control the block. I have to stay on blocks. You know, everything was opposite when I got to New England. Like in college, it was like you don't stay on the block. You boom, boom, you hit the gap, you go. Well, when I got to New England, it's like, no, you don't hit no gap. No, your backside. You know, you sit here. Everything is slowed down. And it took me a while. It took me 3 years.
Wow.
To really get that
concept. So Belichick saw that in you.
He saw something in me, yeah.
And how do you have a conversation with a coach who's trying to make you do something that you're not used to doing?
Man, let me tell you something. It was like, I don't know what the hell this is, coach. Like, I'm not used, like, hold this guy. What? Like, hold? No, man, I'm hitting it and getting it. But he saw something in me. Like, and that's why I have to tell people, and people have to understand, I had to learn a totally new position.
Even though it's only about 3 feet away from the other position.
I had to learn that. I had to learn how to be a nose tackle.
Joe, the guy sitting next to me here, Gio, was an offensive lineman in high school.
Oh, Lord.
He was, man. And, you know, every now and then we actually do have scrimmages here at the station.
Oh, Lord.
And so one day we had a scrimmage here, and Steven, if you could find that tape showing Gio,
I want to see this.
You got to see him pancake our own nose tackle here, Sean Marash.
Yeah, he was talking a lot of trash, and he outweighs. So I'm in the red helmet, and my butt crack comes out a little bit there. But I pancaked the guy. You see there, that was me. Yeah, wearing the Terps helmet. But look at it, see?
Watch the center.
Bang,
watch what
put the head
the
down.
Center. You see the center wearing the Tampa
the
Bay?
He's too high. First of all, the low man wins. And that's what happened to the center. The guy on the ground.
Yeah, that's the center. That's our producer there, Al Dukes, right there.
Yeah.
He got steamrolled. He took both of them out. Look at him.
Yeah, man, I was fired up that day.
Yeah. I was pancaked.
So what I'd like to do is after we get done with you, maybe we can go back out there.
No, it's okay. No,
I'm washed up. You're good.
Oh my goodness. To me, I you're a Hall of Famer, no?
I mean, it's not up to me.
But I mean, you got to feel like you got a pretty good chance to get in at some point.
But the thing is, like, what's the criteria?
One of the best defensive tackles of all time.
Well, I'll tell you this. If it's about stats, no.
Yeah. But here's the deal, Vince. I got on this radio program back in 2007, mm-hmm. and I was screaming from the high heavens for one Joe Klecko to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And I played against Joe.
Yeah.
I had a center by the name of Dave Remington who played at Nebraska who couldn't sleep the night before. Yeah. We were roommates, and he'd be rubbing his feet together because he knew he had to play against Joe Klecko.
Yeah.
And Joe was an animal on the field. And everybody who played with him, Marty Lyons, Mark Gastineau, Abdul Salam, they all benefited from playing this guy.
Right.
He was that much of a disruptor. And finally, he finally gets in. Eventually, what it's going to take somebody that you played against, your own teammates, you know, the offensive line that you saw in and out every year, really going out there and lobbying for you.
Well, you know,
that's what it takes. People forget how great players were.
Yeah.
Farther you're away from it, and the more Aaron Donalds there are, the Quinnen Williams of the world, you know, these great players that we see today, they tend to forget how important somebody like you were to your team.
Yeah, you know, and I never played once. Never growing up or never playing, saying I wanted to be a Hall of Famer. You know, I play the game because I love it. I love my teammates, and I just love the game of football. You know, that's even now. It's like I care less. Like if it happens, it happens. If it don't, it don't. Like I wanted to be the greatest teammate I could possibly be and win. That's it. And whatever comes with that. So if it happens, it happens. If it don't happen, don't happen. But I can tell you this: I was in everybody's offense's playbook, game plan. I was there.
Yes, they had to take care of you, man.
And not only that is you had to find me because I started off a nose tackle, but once I got more and more better at what I did, my craft, well, Bill moved me. So now I'm lining up at defensive end. I'm playing, you know, three technique. I'm playing two technique. I'm in sub packages. So now you have to find me. Like year four and five, now you have to find me because I'm not just lined up over the nose. So I played from top to bottom, from left to right, and I did it all, you know, so.
Hey, before you go, what do you think of Tom Brady as a broadcaster?
I don't know.
Been stared at like that
in my life, other than my wife giving me those eyes.
I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, he's very knowledgeable of the game. Like, that's what it is, but I would rather be my quarterback than my, you know, on TV. doing what he's doing now.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
I love him for my quarterback.
And he may only be doing it this year. He's so involved with the Raiders ownership. I wouldn't be surprised. I think there's a lot of rumblings. Yeah. He does Super Bowl and it's done.
I heard there's a lot going on with, legally what he can and cannot do. So,
so what's going? What do you think? Do you think Deion goes to the Cowboys?
Oh, man.
What would you think of that? Do you see him as a head coach in the NFL?
I don't know. To me, Deion means so much to the game itself. And I think he can pour more into the young kids in college than the NFL. That's what I truly believe. But what do he want to do? Now, if his ultimate goal is to be a head coach for the America's team, or a head coach in general in the NFL, he got to do his best for him. But me looking in at what he means to football and what he means to me in general, I think he's more important for kids coming out of high school, your college,
right?
Teach you the game and teach you about life. And I think that's a pivotal moment in a young kid's life to be. And I think he's perfect where he's at in college.
You know, one of my lasting images of you and was when you were with the Texans, and you showed up, and it was on
overalls, baby.
Yes, you had the overalls.
I should have brought them
here
because it's cold enough.
That's what I asked. I asked if you were going to wear those. I mean, what were you thinking that day?
Well, you know what the thing was. It's like I used to have a ranch in Florida, okay. And when I go out to my ranch, I used to dress like that. I used to put my overalls on. I used to have all different colors. I would put my overalls on. I'll go to work. My boots, man. I would go to work.
That's great.
And this is right before camp. So we talking about 90 to 100 degrees in Florida, so I'm, and we was just having one of those practices in like a couple of days, and it was just a crappy practice. Nobody was engaged. Like, it was just one of those sad, how those dog days is.
Sure, yeah.
And I said, I have to do something to kind of lighten this mood because we're not getting nothing done. We done been cursed out every day, okay, enough is enough. So I say, this is what I'm going to do.
And that was Bill O'Brien who was
questioning
you. Yeah,
so I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go on and put my little outfit on. It was fitting. Well, I'm in Texas. So I'm like, I'm going to put my outfit on and I'm going to go to work and see. And you know what? It did the trick. And I think part of being a leader, that's you have to be able to see and understand how to get through to players and people. And I think that was, that for me, it was like, okay, what can I do to lighten this load? Because we're not there. What can I do? So you bring a little laughter, and it helped, and it did it. We laughed, we joked about it. I mean, the whole day, and then guess what? The next day, we're back at it. We don't think about dog days. We back practicing. We getting stuff done. So I just had a good time with it. My teammates was great about it. I mean, I just knew we needed something to happen. And what Bill O'Brien was doing wasn't working. So I'm like, Coach, let me step in.
That is tremendous. This Tums Fantasy Football Pool is a great idea. They got the Spicy Foods Draft, the 13th to the 19th, 20th to the 26th, Sweet Foods, and then the New Orleans Foods leading up to the Super Bowl on February 9th. So go check it out. And Tums, man, they've been around and they've been effective for a very long time. Tums is in my cabinet all the time. They do a great job, so we're happy that you're here on behalf of them, and we appreciate the time, Vince. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, it was great to see you again, man.
It's awesome.
Awesome,
guys.
Good job, man.
Yesterday's passing of the legend, Hall of Famer Bob Uecker. Of course, many of the humorous clips from Major League and the commercials and Johnny Carson and Mr. Belvedere were making the rounds, but also this one in the immediate moments after Alonso and the Mets eliminated the Brewers back in early October. 90-year-old Uecker still on the call for Brewers Radio as they summed it up.
Well, New York down. They did it. And the crew will have it end.
Really a crushing end to what was a fabulous season for the Milwaukee Brewers.
I'm telling you, that one had some sting on it.
And you can hear the emotion in the voice. It sure did have some sting on it from his perspective and that of the Brewers. Beloved in that community, the baseball community, really the sports world in general, pop culture as well. But Milwaukee and Wisconsin, right? That's what we think of.
Yeah.
Brewers radio man since the early 1970s. So Alex Rodriguez, who he fashions himself as a bit of a baseball historian, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
He's up on his history, knows what's up. So A-Rod yesterday on Twitter X, 349, and I did check before I came in to see if this was still active on his page, and it was
3:49 p.m.
3:49 p.m. yesterday. Yes, yeah, so we're talking. What is that now? About 16 hours ago now or so?
Yeah.
Heartbroken to lose Bob Uecker, an iconic voice of baseball. He brought joy not only to Cleveland, but to baseball fans everywhere. And his iconic catchphrase is yada, 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 yada.
Oh, wow. What's what?
Cleveland still sitting out there in that tweet.
Well, I did need that.
Maybe you just watch Major League or something. Who knows?
That's obviously where that comes from.
Yeah.
Right. We get that, but that's a bad one.
Anytime you get a great fundamentalist.
Man, I wish I was that oblivious, where you could put out such a horrible mistake and then just leave it up there and have no idea that it's going on.
Yeah.
Just be in a world, just be like so rich and so famous that you're not even thinking about that.
Doesn't somebody in his life say something to him like, hey, might want to change that to Milwaukee?
Right.
Dumbo.
Not going back to Twitter is one thing. Who knows if he is even the one posting things on Twitter.
Someone's got to send him a text
or a call. If you know, not, I Kevin think, Burkhardt, if nothing else.
You know, I think who runs that Twitter account for him?
His daughter?
Yuri Sukart. I think he's the guy who's been running that X account for
Yuri Sukart, man, a name for the passport.
And by, you know, sometimes when someone who's 90 or around there passes that was in entertainment, we say things like, man, you know, we should have celebrated that person more when they were alive. I don't feel that way at all about Bob Uecker, because I feel like we really did celebrate him because he was calling games all the way up to the end. Same thing with Vin Scully. It felt like guys like that were always around, and we appreciated them in those last years when they were alive, and it wasn't just like, hey, let's appreciate this guy now that he's dead.
We all loved him. We all loved seeing him in the movies, in his sitcom. Some of his guest spots on Johnny Carson that have been making the rounds were hilarious. He just had a real self-deprecating aspect about himself, and he was always laughing at himself and his career. But he loved the game, for sure. You know, interestingly enough, you know, we always talk about predicting things around here, you know, whether or not, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to come and play, and, you know, who the Giants are going to draft. We always try to figure out what we think is going to be the future. You know, Eddie kind of did this in the case with Bob Uecker.
Did he?
He did, yeah. We actually were talking about Bob Uecker in that particular play, and then Eddie, of course, behind the scenes was... What?
Are we really going to do this?
Well, I mean, it's Bob Uecker. I think it's an ode to Bob Uecker.
No, not
today.
No,
you don't think so?
I feel a little... even me.
I mean, it's out there. I mean, it's out there. We're just not going to talk about it?
What is... Well... No, it's not really out there. You know, it was one guy who found a clip of something that dropped that Eddie played and sent to us. I mean, it's not like it's been written about anywhere. And
I mean, that's Eddie, though. That's who Eddie is.
Yeah. Well, just put it this way. Eddie made a funny drop after the Brewers were eliminated by the Mets, and that's what Boomer is alluding to, and we'll just leave it at that.
It's more like a mix even more so than a drop.
Yeah, it was under the whole thing. It wasn't like a drop. It was just the noise that Eddie was playing was just
a little underbed.
Yeah. I bet you what. I'll tell you what, Bob Uecker would appreciate it.
I would agree with that.
With his sense of humor and his way of seeing things and knowing that it's about making people laugh, that's what he was all about.
Indeed.
And one of those guys who I haven't seen one yet. I don't think there's anyone out there who's got a bad word to say about him, right?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Obviously, when people are going to come out of the woodwork when he passes and say it. But all these years, I can't remember ever seeing anyone say anything negative about Bob Uecker.
I mean, people, broadcasters who would go and meet him in Milwaukee would always have these amazing things to say, that he would always give his time up and, you know, was just...
I think you got to go to the Phil Mushnick test. If Phil Mushnick probably didn't write one bad thing about him. That's when you know somebody is actually
really
resonating with everybody and is just basically passed everything with flying colors.
Yep.